A sloth, a donkey, and a curious human. Send a prompt and see what they're doing. One hits a record with a question on his mind. Two brothers pick it up, see what they find. Corn takes his time, Herman's got the facts. Back and forth, they never hold back. My weird prompts, come on in, that's where we begin. My weird prompts, glad you're here.
This episode was generated using artificial intelligence. Please verify facts.
Daniel sent us this one, and it's basically a cry for help wrapped in a very specific question. He's lived in Israel for years, he's fed up with the banks, and he wants to know, is there any way to get a non-Israeli, fiat-based, US dollar-denominated credit or debit card that actually works for someone living here? Not some sketchy workaround that collapses in 6 months. A real financial instrument with good digital UX, decent customer service, and legitimacy. His thesis is that the best financial advice for living in Israel is to avoid Israeli institutions entirely. So where do we even start?
We start with the fact that he's mostly right, and the reason he's right isn't an accident. It's structural. Israel's banking market is an oligopoly. 5 banks, Leumi, Hapoalim, Discount, Mizrahi Tefahat, and First International, control roughly 95% of retail banking assets. That's from the Bank of Israel's 2024 annual report. When 5 players own the whole board, they don't compete on customer experience, they compete on inertia.
The take-it-or-leave-it model of customer service, which explains the call center that closes at 4. That's not a call center, that's a hobby.
It's genuinely remarkable. And it's not just the hours. Israeli credit card cashback rates average 0.5% to 1%, according to the Bank of Israel's credit card survey from last year. In the U.S., 2-5% is standard. The Israeli card issuers, Isracard, Max, Cal, they're not even trying. Why would they? Where are you going to go?
That's Daniel's question exactly. He wants to know where else he can go, and his first instinct was probably Wise, the company formerly known as TransferWise. Multi-currency account, debit card, great FX rates, beautiful app. It's the obvious answer. And it's blocked.
Wise is not registered as a payment service provider under Israel's 2019 payment services law. The Bank of Israel has not approved them. If you try to open a Wise account with an Israeli address, an Israeli phone number, a 2-dot Zehut, you get rejected at the address verification step. I've seen the support page. It's explicit. Israeli residents are not eligible.
This is not a try a VPN situation. Wise requires proof of address. Utility bill, bank statement, something with your name and address on it. They run periodic checks. People have had accounts frozen and closed when Wise figured out they weren't actually living at that address in Portugal or wherever.
The regulatory choke point is real. The payment services law requires any foreign fintech that wants to operate here to register with the Bank of Israel and comply with local anti-money laundering and know your customer rules. It's not a trivial process. It's expensive, it's slow, and for a company like Wise that operates in dozens of countries, the Israeli market of 9 million people just doesn't justify the compliance cost.
9 million people who are, famously, desperate for better banking. So you'd think there's demand.
There's demand, but the regulator hasn't made it easy. The Bank of Israel launched a regulatory sandbox for foreign fintechs in January 2025. It's designed to let companies test the waters with a lighter regulatory burden. As of July 2026, no major neobank has entered. Not Wise, not Revolut, not N26. The sandbox is open, but the sand is, apparently, not inviting.
The sandbox is full of cats. Let's talk about the ones who tried and left.
Revolut was actually exploring the Israeli market and then pulled out in 2022. They cited regulatory complexity, according to CTEX reporting at the time. N26, the German neobank, stopped accepting Israeli residents the same year. They put up a blog post in June 2022 saying essentially, "We're focusing on our core European markets. Compliance costs are too high. Goodbye."
The three biggest names in global neobanking, Wise, Revolut, N26, have all either rejected or abandoned Israeli residents. That's a clean sweep. What about American Express? Daniel mentioned wanting a US dollar-denominated card. Amex is global.
American Express Israel is a separate entity from Amex US. They're related, but distinct. There is something called Amex Global Transfer, which lets you take your Amex relationship from one country to another. If you already have an Amex card in, say, the US or the UK, you can sometimes get one in Israel. But for a non-American with no prior Amex relationship, it's a dead end. You can't just apply for a US Amex card from Israel without a US Social Security number and a US credit history.
The obvious paths are all blocked. Wise is out. Revolut is out. N26 is out. Amex US requires a US identity. What does that leave?
This is where it gets interesting, because there are paths. They're just not obvious. The most plausible one for someone like Daniel, who's not American, lives in Israel, wants a US dollar denominated card with good digital UX, is the US business entity route.
He forms a company?
He forms a US LLC, a limited liability company. You can do this entirely online from Israel. Services like LegalZoom or Stripe Atlas handle the paperwork. It costs about $300 to set up, plus annual state filing fees. If you register in a state like Delaware or Wyoming, the annual costs are low, maybe $100 to $200 a year. California is more expensive, about $200 a year in franchise tax minimum.
Once you have the LLC, you're not just a guy in Jerusalem asking a US bank for an account. You're a US business.
And US digital banks like Mercury and Relay will open accounts for US LLCs even when the owner is a non-resident foreigner. Mercury is especially popular for this. You get a US business checking account, a debit card, a beautiful web dashboard, and it's all denominated in US dollars. Customer service is email and chat based, typically under an hour response time. It's not phone support, but it's real.
The debit card works for online purchases. It's USD, it's got good UX, and the customer service is better than a call center that closes at 4p. That's checking a lot of Daniel's boxes. What's the catch?
A few catches. First, there's the annual compliance cost. You need to file IRS Form 5472 every year as a foreign-owned US LLC, plus a pro forma tax return. You'll probably want an accountant who knows cross-border stuff. That's maybe $300 to $500 a year. Second, the LLC route gives you a business debit card, not a personal credit card. It won't build your US credit history, and it's technically for business expenses. People use it for personal spending too, but you're in a gray area.
The business expenses being your grocery bill and Netflix subscription. I'm sure the IRS is very concerned about that.
In practice, it's rarely an issue for small amounts, but it's worth knowing. The bigger practical question is how you fund the account. Daniel earns in shekels. He needs to get shekels into a US dollar account without losing 3% to his Israeli bank's foreign exchange spread.
Right, because Israeli bank FX spreads on international wires average 2.5% to 3%. The market did a comparison piece in January 2026. It's brutal. You wire $10,000 worth of shekels. You lose $300 just on the spread.
That's before any wire fees. So the workaround is to not use your Israeli bank for the FX. You use a specialist broker like InstaRem or Currency Fair. These are regulated money changers that offer rates around 0.5% above the interbank rate, compared to the 2 to 3% at the bank counter. You send shekels to InstaRem, convert to dollars there, then wire the dollars to your Mercury account.
The chain is Israeli bank account to InstaRem, shekels to dollars, then InstaRem to Mercury. That's three steps every time you want to fund the card.
It is, and that's the friction. It's not instant. It might take 2 to 3 business days. You need to plan ahead, but you're saving 1.5% to 2% on every transfer. If you're moving $10,000 a year, that's $150 to $200 saved. If you're moving $50,000, it's real money.
Let's talk about the break-even on the LLC route. You said $300 to set up, maybe $300 to $500 a year in compliance costs. That's roughly $500 a year minimum. When does that pay off?
For a heavy spender in US dollars, someone who travels frequently, buys a lot online from US merchants, or earns in dollars, the break-even is around $10,000 a year in USD spending. You're saving on FX fees. You're getting better cash back if you eventually qualify for a U.S. credit card through the LLC, and you're avoiding the Israeli bank's international transaction fees. Below $10,000 a year, the compliance costs eat your savings. Above it, you come out ahead.
The LLC route is for power users. What about someone who just wants a better Israeli banking experience without the international gymnastics?
That's where 1-0 comes in. 1-0 is Israel's first new bank in over 40 years. It launched in 2023, fully digital, no physical branches. As of early 2026, they have about 150,000 customers. The app is modern, the customer service is 24/7 via chat, and they offer a multi-currency account with competitive FX rates.
I've played with their app. It's good. It feels like a fintech product, not a bank that hired a design agency to reskin their 1990s mainframe.
That's exactly the right description. And they're regulated by the Bank of Israel, so your deposits are insured, it's all legitimate. The limitation is that you're still inside the Israeli system. 1-0 is a better interface to the same regulatory framework. You still have Israeli reporting requirements, Israeli tax implications, and you're still subject to Israeli capital controls and currency restrictions.
For the average Israeli resident who's just tired of Lumi's app crashing, or Hapoalim's customer service telling them to come into a branch for something that should be a tap on a phone, 1-0 is the best single move you can make.
And you can pair it with a dual-currency credit card. Several Israeli banks now offer these. Lumi has the dollar card, for example. It bills in U.S. dollars, so when you use it for online purchases from U.S. merchants, you avoid the 1.5% foreign transaction fee that most Israeli cards charge. Combined with 1-0's multi-currency account, you've eliminated a lot of the friction without ever leaving the Israeli system.
That's the 80% solution. 1-0 for daily banking, a dual-currency card for USD spending, and Instarm for any international wires. You're not getting U.S.-style rewards or a fully offshore account, but you fixed the worst parts of the Israeli banking experience.
That's worth spelling out because the gap between Israeli cards and U.S. cards isn't just about rewards, it's the total cost. On an international transaction, an Israeli credit card might hit you with a 1.5% foreign transaction fee, a 2.5% FX spread, and then give you 0.5% cashback. Net cost, roughly 3.5%. A good U.S. card gives you zero foreign transaction fees, near interbank FX rates, and 2% cashback. Net benefit, roughly 2%. The gap is over 5% per transaction.
5% is the we don't care about you tax. So we've got the LLC power user route and the 1-0 normal person route. What about the digital nomad loophole? Daniel mentioned digital nomad specifically.
This is the gray area option. If you maintain a foreign address, a friend's place in the UK, a virtual mailbox in Estonia, a relative's apartment in France, you can often open a Wise or Revolut or N26 account using that address. Many digital nomads do this. The platform's terms of service technically require residency, but enforcement is inconsistent. If the platform detects that you're actually living in Israel, through IP addresses, spending patterns, or a periodic address verification check, they can close your account and freeze your funds while they investigate. It's rare, but it happens. And when it happens, it's a nightmare. Your money is locked up for weeks, you have no recourse, and you violated the terms of service, so you don't have much ground to stand on.
It's tempting. It works for a lot of people. But you need a backup Israeli account with enough money to live on if your foreign neobank decides to ruin your Tuesday.
Keep a funded Israeli account as your safety net. Never put all your money in the gray area foreign account, and be aware that as open banking and data sharing improve, it's going to get harder to maintain the fiction of residency. The Bank of Israel and the Tax Authority are not naive about this.
The Tax Authority being especially not naive about money that might be sitting outside their view. Which brings up a point we should address directly. All of these workarounds are legal in terms of having foreign accounts, but Israeli residents are required to report foreign accounts and pay taxes on worldwide income. We're not talking about hiding money, we're talking about accessing better financial services.
The LLC route is fully legal and reportable. You file your forms, you declare the account, you pay your taxes. The benefit isn't tax avoidance, it's service quality and fee reduction. That's an important distinction.
Let's talk about one more angle Daniel raised, the funded in debit model. He specifically wants something he can fund periodically rather than a traditional credit card with a credit line. Why is that appealing?
For a non-American with no U.S. credit history, getting an unsecured U.S. credit card is nearly impossible. U.S. credit card issuers want a social security number and a FICO score. A debit card tied to an account you fund yourself doesn't require credit history. You put money in, you spend it. It's simpler, it's lower risk for the issuer, and it gives you a US dollar denominated card with a Visa or MasterCard logo that works everywhere.
The Mercury debit card fits that perfectly. Fund the account, use the card, no credit check required. What about eToro? Daniel mentioned trading platforms that offer debit cards.
eToro is interesting because they do operate in Israel. They have a money changer license from the Israeli regulator. They offer a multi-currency wallet and a debit card in some markets. But eToro is primarily a trading platform, not a bank. Your funds are not FDIC insured, the card isn't available in all countries, and the experience is built around trading, not daily banking. It's an option, but it's not a banking replacement.
It's the "I wanted the checking account, but I got a CFD platform" experience.
That's the one. Plus 500 is similar. They have an Israeli presence and offer multi-currency wallets, but again, you're banking with a trading platform. The risk profile is different.
Let's zoom out for a second. The structural problem here, the reason we're having this conversation at all, is that Israel's banking reform has stalled. The Strum Committee published its recommendations in 2021. These were supposed to increase competition, make it easier for new banks to enter, force the incumbents to improve. As of mid-2026, Calculus reported that only about 30% of the recommendations have been implemented.
30% in 5 years. That's a pace that suggests they're not in a hurry. The open banking APIs that were supposed to let fintechs build on top of the existing banks, the Bank of Israel pushed for those in 2024, but the real-world impact has been limited. The incumbents have no incentive to make it easy for competitors to plug into their infrastructure.
The oligopoly protects itself. It's not a conspiracy, it's just math. 5 banks, 95% market share, no foreign competitors allowed in without a regulatory gauntlet. What exactly is supposed to change?
The regulatory sandbox is the official answer. The Bank of Israel says they're open for business, they want foreign fintechs, they've created this lighter framework. But a sandbox is not a license. It's a trial period with restrictions, and after the trial, you still need full regulatory approval. For a company like Wise that operates in 50-plus countries, the Israeli sandbox might not be worth the legal and compliance resources.
Especially when the market is 9 million people, many of whom will just keep using their existing bank out of inertia. The addressable market of people like Daniel, financially literate, English-speaking, willing to do paperwork to escape Israeli banks, is a fraction of that.
It's a niche within a niche, which is why the workarounds we're describing are probably the permanent reality, not a temporary bridge until Wise launches in Tel Aviv.
Let's build the decision tree. You're an Israeli resident. You're fed up with the banks, you want better service and lower fees, and you don't want to use crypto. What do you do?
Tier 1, for basically everyone, open a 1-0 account. Modern app, 24/7 chat support, multi-currency, decent FX rates. Pair it with a dual currency credit card from whichever incumbent bank you're already stuck with, Lumi's dollar card or equivalent. Use Instarm or CurrencyFair for any international wire transfers. This solves maybe 80% of the pain with zero legal risk and minimal effort.
Tier 2, for people who spend heavily in dollars or travel frequently, the US LLC plus Mercury route. Set up an LLC in Delaware or Wyoming, get a Mercury business account, funded via InstaRem, use the Mercury debit card for USD spending. Annual cost is roughly $500 in compliance, break even at about $10,000 a year in USD spending. This is fully legal, fully reportable, and gives you a US dollar denominated card with good digital UX.
Tier 3, the gray zone. Maintain a foreign address and use Wise or Revolut or N26. It works until it doesn't. Keep a backup Israeli account. Accept the risk of account closure. This is the I value convenience over certainty option.
The thing that doesn't exist, a non-Israeli US dollar denominated, fiat-based credit card that's openly available to Israeli residents with no workarounds, no LLCs, and no gray area address games. That product is not on the market in 2026.
I don't think it's coming soon. The Bank of Israel sandbox is a small step, but until the payment services law is reformed to make registration easier for foreign fintechs, or until the Strum Committee recommendations are actually implemented, the structural barriers stay in place. maybe by 2028 the landscape looks different. I wouldn't bet on it.
The open banking angle is the one to watch. If third-party fintechs can eventually build on top of Israeli bank infrastructure through real functioning APIs, you could see Israeli startups offering Wise-like experiences without needing Wise itself. There are companies working on this, Finibot, RiseUp, but they're early stage, and their offerings are more budgeting tools than full banking replacements.
RiseUp is interesting because they do offer a multi-currency account and a debit card, and they're Israeli regulated. But they position themselves as a money management platform for couples and families, not a full bank replacement. The feature set isn't quite there yet for what Daniel's describing.
The actionable summary is, 1-0 is the best single move for most people. The LLC route is the power move for heavy USD users. Instarem or currency fair for any international transfer, never your bank's wire desk. And if you're going to play the foreign address game, keep a backup.
On the customer service point specifically, because Daniel mentioned the 4P call center, which is just chef's kiss, as a symbol of institutional indifference, 1-0's chat support is 24/7. Mercury responds within about an hour by email. Wise has 24/7 chat but no phone support. None of these are perfect, but all of them clear the extremely low bar set by Israeli incumbents.
The bar is a call center that closes at 4 p.m. It's on the floor. You can step over it.
You can trip over it accidentally.
One final question. Will this ever get better? Or are workarounds the permanent solution?
I think workarounds are the solution for the foreseeable future. The structural incentives are too strong. The five big banks have no reason to improve. The regulator moves slowly and the market is small. What could change the equation is if open banking APIs actually mature and Israeli fintech startups build competitive products on top of them. That's a bottom-up disruption rather than waiting for Wise to get regulated. It's slower, but it's more likely.
The best financial advice for living in Israel is to treat the banking system as a necessary evil. Use it for what you must. Salary deposits, mortgage, basic shekel checking, and root around it for everything else. The tools exist. They just require more paperwork than they should.
Which is, in a way, the most Israeli outcome possible. The solution exists, but you have to want it badly enough to fill out forms in two languages and three time zones.
Now, Hilbert's daily fun fact.
In the 1920s, astronomers realized that lunar libration, the moon's apparent wobble, had an unintended consequence for observers in the Caspian Basin. The combination of latitude and the moon's north-south nodding meant certain craters near the lunar south pole were visible from Baku roughly 4 extra nights per year compared to observers at the same latitude in North America.
The Caspian Basin getting a bonus crater viewing window is not something I had on my bingo card. This has been My Weird Prompts. Thanks to our producer, Hilbert Flumingtop. If you enjoyed this episode, tell someone who's complained about their bank in the last month, which is everyone. Email the show at show@myweirdprompts.com. I'm Korn.
I'm Herman Poppleberry. The best banking advice is to have an LLC in Delaware and a friend in Estonia.
That's not our official position.
It's not our official position.
This episode's script was written by DeepSeek V4 Pro, with text-to-speech by Chatterbox.
Thanks for listening to our show, My Weird Prompts, where odd thoughts go. From sloth slow takes to facts on cue, we chase the strange and follow through. Some nights it's news, some nights it's lore, a thought you've never heard before. The host dig in, the host dig deep. The stranger the prompt, the less they sleep. From tiny questions, big ones too. From half-formed hunches to deja vu. If something odd is in your head, send it in, we'll chase the thread. My weird prompts, that's the close. From sloth, from man, from long-eared host. My weird prompts, until next time. Stay curious, keep weird in mind.